Walter Sports Bar in Navy Yard offers $5 happy hour in both snacks and drinks. To reserve a table, visit waltersdc.com/happy hour.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Josiah Gray to the belt, first base side of the rubber, kicks and delivers, and a swing and a fly ball left center field. Winker and the center fielder Young come together. Winker makes the catch. He'll get it into second. Tagging from third is Connor Joe. He comes in to score the fourth run of the inning for the Pirates. And it's the Pirates 4, the Nationals still to come to bat. Here's a swing and a shot up the middle, base hit center field, out of the reach of the diving Abrams. Rounding third, Taylor coming through toward the plate. He will score. Single up the middle for Reynolds with yet another hit against Josiah Gray. And with one out here in the top of the second, it's the Pirates 5 of the Nationals. Nothing.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Friday, April 5th, 2024, along with MassinSports.com Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, who is at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. Well, go figure. Thursday was the least rainy day of the work week so far, but Thursday was the day on which we, for the first time this regular season, did have a Nationals game delayed by rain. The start for game 3 of their series against the Pittsburgh Pirates at Nationals Park was delayed for an hour and 10 minutes due to rain. And if you're Josiah Gray, you may be wishing that the game never started. He was bad for a second time in as many starts in this regular season. The Nats lost 7-4 to lose the series 2-1. The Nats in this regular season now are just 2-4. This episode of Nats Chat is brought to us by the Fret Nats, the Nationals' single A affiliate in Northern Virginia. Their opening weekend begins a Friday night. See the future stars of the Washington Nationals right down the road in Fredericksburg. Tickets start at just $10. You can buy your tickets now at frednats.com/tickets. Well, maybe this is a Thursday thing. Now, two Thursdays ago, March 28th, Josiah Gray allowed 7 runs in 4 innings in the Nats' 8-2 opening day loss at the Cincinnati Reds. And now we have what happened on this most recent Thursday, Gray officially allowing 6 runs in 4 and a third innings in this 7-4 loss to the Pirates. Mark, it's certainly too early in the season to panic about Josiah Gray, but it is not too early to say that he has not been good so far.
He has not been anything close to good so far, Al. And I think the disturbing part of it, if there is such a thing, even 2 starts in, is that the problems are things that we have seen from him in the past. To me, it's 2 things that really stand out. Number one, his misses are way out of the zone, especially with his fastball. And it's always the same thing. As a right-hander, everything tailing high and away to his arm side. And that's a mechanics thing. This is something we've talked about for more than 2 years with him. So it's one thing not to throw strikes, but it's another thing to throw completely non-competitive pitches. And that's a lot of what he is doing here so far this season. And then the second part is, when he does get ahead in the count, and he did get ahead in the count quite a bit, especially in that first inning of this game, he gets the 2 strikes on guys, and then he can't finish them off. He's going from 0-2 to 3-2 very often. And even if he does ultimately get the hitter out, that's just driving the pitch count up to the point that he's not going to be able to go deep in games. These are both issues we've seen from him in the last 2 years. Now, not all the time, and we certainly last year saw him for a long stretch be very good. So I'm not going to sit here and say that that's out the window, that he can't become that guy again. But two starts into this one, what we're seeing are a lot of the signs of what we've seen from him in the past when he was not anywhere close to being at his best.
You look at what went down on Thursday, like we said, officially, 6 runs in 4 1/3 innings. He gave up 7 hits, which were comprised of 2 doubles and 5 singles. He issued 3 walks. 3 walks in just 4 1/3 innings, not good. He recorded just 3 strikeouts, and he, over the 4 1/3 innings, ended up throwing 96 pitches, 58 strikes versus 38 balls. It was a disastrous top of the first for Gray. He allowed 4 runs on a double, 2 singles, and 2 walks. He, in the top of the second, allowed a run on a double and a single. And he, in the top of the fifth, was charged with a run off issuing a one-out walk to the final batter he faced, Jack Suwinski. Now, Gray did not have a good exhibition season. 5 starts, 16 1/3 innings, ERA a 6.61, a whip of 196. But we know the deal with spring training stats. They can be really misleading. Guys are working on stuff. So you really felt foolish getting caught up in those numbers. But it was not a good exhibition season overall for Gray. Are you seeing things carry over from that to this? Or is what is happening now different from what was happening in that Grapefruit League season?
You know, it's funny. It's only been a couple of weeks, but I don't even remember that many details about his spring training starts, which shows you how much credence I give to those. I feel like there were a couple of good ones and a couple of pretty bad ones in there. So it's not like it was consistently bad. No, watching these, I'm seeing things that we saw last year, especially in that like August and early September stretch when he was really struggling after the great first half of the season. I'm seeing a lot of that. Now, he's not giving up homers, at least in this game, he didn't do that. So I guess that's a good thing. But it's, you know, he's got 7 different pitches and he's throwing everything at them. And you can tell he tried, it seemed to me early on, like he was trying to actually do what Davey Martinez and Jim Hickey have been asking of him, which is establish your fastball, use your changeup more. They talked about that after the last start. Well, he did that, except he couldn't throw them for strikes. The changeup was getting hit and the fastball was not being located at all. And so as the game went on, he went back to what we've seen him do at times in the past and say, okay, I'm just going to throw breaking balls the majority of the time. Now, it was more effective. He was better in the later innings of the start. But as we've talked about more than once here, you can't do that consistently over a career and be successful without having some semblance of fastball command. So you can't abandon that pitch altogether. And too often than not, we've seen him get to a point that he kind of feels like just out of desperation mode, he has to do that. He's got to be able to throw fastballs in the strike zone and not give up hits on them. And to me, that's all mechanics. I mean, we saw it when he flies open, his head tilts to the left, the shoulder is open, and everything starts tailing off to the side, to the right side, to his arm side. And I guess it's a hard thing in the moment to decipher and to correct, but it's not the first time, and hopefully it's the last time, but you have a hunch that it won't be the last time we see that from him.
I think him using so many pitches is so interesting. I know we've talked about this, but I feel like it's a function of two things. Number one, we know that Josiah Gray is a thinker, maybe even an overthinker. And so I think when you're an overthinker, you want to try different things and you don't want to abandon any singular thing. And so you're maybe more willing to say, well, let me try this. Well, no, let me also try that. And so you end up trying a whole bunch of stuff. And then the other thing is, it's kind of like the saying in football, if you have 2 quarterbacks, you don't have any. If you have 7 pitches, you maybe don't have any. You know, like that in a lot of ways, I think, is an indictment of him not having any great singular pitch. And so he feels this compelling force to use a bunch of pitches because he doesn't really like any one pitch. And so you wind up with him constantly doing this, using all these pitches, and too often they're not working, or at least enough aren't working. And, you know, you go back to last season, look, his strikeouts at times were good, but they were never great. He's not a strikeout pitcher the way you define a strikeout pitcher in the modern MLB. And the good stuff that he did last season, and he did do good stuff, but he did that with a whip of 1.459. That is a really high whip. He put a lot of guys on base. And, you know, I think there is this feeling, I know I've had it, of last season was good, but, you know, was there kind of a house of cards element to it to where he overachieved? Because the peripherals do not suggest that he should have done as well as he did last season. ERA a 3.91, a WAR per baseball reference a 3.1. And, you know, I'm not saying that now he's, you know, a total mess, but I think, you know, what you see these first two starts, he's putting guys on base. And when you do that, you're going to give up runs. Like, it's hard to keep doing that and not give up runs.
Yeah, his best quality last year was his ability to pitch out of jams, which, hey, that's a great quality if you have that. But again, you're tempting fate when you do that all the time, and it's hard to consistently go about it that way. So yeah, I do think that is a problem for him. And, you know, you said he's not really a big strikeout pitcher. I feel like sometimes he's trying to be, though. I think he gets two strikes on guys and he tries to make the perfect pitch and he ends up throwing everything off the plate. And now all you're doing is extending the at-bat instead of saying, okay, you know what? I got him 0-2. Let me make a good quality pitch that is, you know, on the edge of the zone and try to get some weak contact with it instead of the perfect pitch that they're just not chasing. I do think his slider is legitimately an above average, very good pitch for him, but you got to have something else to set up the slider. You can't just be a slider heavy, slider first kind of guy. And so I think that's where the fastball comes in and why they need the changeup as well. I mean, look, it's two starts. It's all we have to work off of so far. So it's easy to, you know, decipher and dig deep into all that and try to figure out, you know, is this a bad sign? Is it just a blip? I will just say Josiah himself was not happy. His quote after this one was, honestly, I'm embarrassed to come out here and do that for the guys. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't sit right with me. I know that I deserve better. They deserve better. He knows that he was given the assignment of being their opening day starter. And whether he is truly their number one or not, at least to begin the season, that's the role that he's in. And he knows he has let them down with these first two performances. So it's not like he's delusional here. He doesn't think he's doing a lot better than he is or just blaming this on weak contact and seeing eye singles, anything like that. He knows he has to be better than this.
And good for him for, you know, feeling that responsibility. I mean, I think Josiah Gray, he comes off really smart, really mature. And I think there are a lot of good things that you can say about the guy. I would, though, also inject this into the conversation. If you remember how his 2023 season played out, he last August and September had a stretch of being quite bad in 5 of 6 starts. Now, he ended his season with 3 consecutive, like, decent slash good starts. But if you go back to last August and you just start from there, he's been a lot more bad than good since then. You know, he had that really rough stretch, ended the season in a pretty good way, but now has begun this 2024 regular season in a bad way. So just something to keep in mind, our most recent impressions of Josiah Gray have not been our best impressions. The best of Gray last season in a lot of ways was leading up to the All-Star break. It's not like he was terrible after that, but the best of Gray in a lot of ways was what he was doing going into that All-Star break. And then after that was when things got rough, certainly at times.
Yeah, absolutely. The one encouraging thing there, those last 3 starts that you mentioned, that came with a change in his mechanics where he sort of slimmed down, if you want to call it that, his windup. So almost to the point that's like he's pitching out of the stretch all the time, just a very simplified delivery. And the results were really good. The command was much better. And I think that's why a lot of people were hopeful that he could just pick right up where he left off coming into this season with that. Obviously, that hasn't been the case, but it's 2 starts. Let's see where it goes from here. I will say, as the schedule lines up now, his next 2 are on the West Coast, 1 in San Francisco, 1 at Dodger Stadium. Neither of those an easy assignment. Certainly the second of those, not an easy assignment at all, as Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts dig into the plate against him when we get to Chavez Ravine next week.
Fredericksburg Nationals. When it comes to fun, we hit a home run.
Head to opening weekend with the Frednats. See the future stars of the Washington Nationals right down the road in Fredericksburg. Kick things off on Friday with a spectacular postgame fireworks show presented by Kevin's Roofing and Attic Insulation. Plus, all fans will find a rally towel at their seats, courtesy of Ray's Siding Company. The fun continues on Saturday with another giveaway. Keep the Frednats schedule close all season long with a magnet schedule presented by Davis Electric. Close out the weekend on Sunday with a Frednats hockey jersey giveaway courtesy of Virginia Credit Union. Don't forget to customize it with your name and number at the team store. Tickets start at just $10. Buy yours now at frednats.com/tickets. When it comes to fun, we hit a home
run. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Here's the pitch to C.J. Abrams, belted a deep right center field. This is way back. Taylor's watching it. It's going, going, and gone. Goodbye. C.J. Abrams, second home run of the year, lands in section 142 above the big 14-foot, 8-inch wall. Bang, zoom goes C.J. Abrams. Home run number two and RBI number five. And it's now the Pirates 7 and the Nationals 2.
Well, the Nats offense in this 7-4 loss to the Pirates on Thursday, rather mixed. There was some good stuff. The Nats drew four walks, went 3-for-8 with runners in scoring position, scored two runs in the bottom of the eighth to make the game at least semi-interesting. But the Nats totaled just 8 hits, 6 of which were singles, and yeah, scored just the 4 runs, including just 2 runs over the first 7 innings. The Nats scored a run in the bottom of the second, a run in the bottom of the fifth, and 2 runs in the bottom of the eighth. The Nats so far in this regular season scoring way too little in the early portions of games. And that stands out, certainly stood out in this game on Thursday. Another rough game for Lane Thomas. He is off to a bad start. Thomas on Thursday as the Nats starting right fielder and number two batter, 0-for-4 with a walk. So you look at Thomas over 6 games in this regular season, 2-for-24 with 3 walks, and both of the hits have been singles. It was good to see the Nats put forth those 2 runs in the bottom of the eighth. The Nats in that inning got a nice 2-out opposite field RBI single through the right side of the infield by Trey Lipscomb. And Luis Garcia Jr. off his 3-double game came off the bench in this game, and he had a pinch 2-out RBI infield single on a grounder off Pirates second baseman Jared Triolo to cut the Nats deficit to 7-4. But, you know, the saying too little too late, that's what we're seeing with the Nats offense too often so far this season here.
Right. And this has been the case other than the game on Wednesday when they got out to the early lead. And, you know, I'm not making an excuse for the lineup, but when you're down 4-0 before you've even come up to bat in the bottom of the first, you're facing an uphill climb. And that's just not, it's really not the way this team is built. I don't know how many teams are built to do that, but I feel like they're just in a much better position when they can score first and kind of be out in front and have a little less pressure on them. Now, the thing in this game that I didn't really love from them offensively is they did not make Martin Perez work at all. Something like 85 pitches in 6+ innings. There were a lot of quick outs. And, you know, sometimes you give credit to a pitcher for inducing weak contact early in the count, but especially when you're trailing, especially as you see an opposing starter cruising along that much, sometimes you do got to stand up there and just take some pitches and force him to work a little bit. They weren't doing that at all. Out of everybody they've faced already this season, that might have been the most effective start by anybody as an opponent. And nothing against Martin Perez, but he's not the best pitcher they've faced so far. He just had the best performance. I think they got a little too aggressive and were making some early outs and not exactly loud contact on a lot of those either.
No, and that's been an issue here with this team so far. Now, there were bright spots. C.J. Abrams does continue to be good. Like I said on the last installment of the show, every game he's doing something. And in this game, he did a little more than something. Abrams as an at starting shortstop and number one batter, 2-for-5 with a solo homer and a single. He and that Nats 1-run 5th, a 2-out first pitch solo homer to right field to cut the Nats deficit to 7-2. The homer went a projected 415 feet per Statcast. And Abrams in the bottom of the 7th had a 2-out opposite field single to left on an 0-2 pitch. That plate appearance actually may have been more impressive than the homer. That was a really good piece of hitting by Abrams. He's off to a terrific start. Six games in this regular season, OPS of 1,074. Also, Jesse Winker and Joey Gallo were good. Winker, another nice game. He was back off having left that Nats 8-4 loss to the Pirates on Monday after just one inning due to being sick. Winker on Thursday as the Nats starting left fielder and number six batter, 1-for-3 with an RBI single and a walk. And each of those plate appearances was impressive. One run second, Winker a one-out RBI single through the right side of the infield to cut the Nats deficit to 5-1 despite having been down at 1.02. And Winker in the Nats a two-run eighth, a two-out walk despite having been down in that count at 1.12. And Joey Gallo, perhaps Gallo has gotten going. He had the big game in the 5-3 win over the Pirates on Wednesday evening, 3-for-4, solo homer, double, and a single. And Gallo on Thursday, again, as the Nats starting first baseman and cleanup batter, 1-for-3 with a double and a walk. He and the Nats, one run second, had a leadoff first pitch double to right field. And in the Nats, a two-run eighth, drew a one-out walk. You know, I feel like it's a tricky deal when it comes to working counts, because obviously you want to drive up pitchers' pitch counts. But there is something to be said for if you see a good pitch on the first pitch, go ahead and attack. And like in this game, the Abrams homer was a first pitch swing. The Gallo double was a first pitch swing. For those who have read the all-time great book, Met at Work by George Will, he at one point in that book, and this book came out, you know, decades ago, I get that, so it might be dated in terms of the research, but he makes a very compelling argument for swinging at first pitches. And you leave that portion of the book saying to yourself, I remember reading this as a kid, I'm like, why doesn't everyone just always swing at the first pitch after you read that by George Will? So I think generally speaking, you want to drive up pitch counts for sure. But I also can see it if you're in that batter's box and you see something you like you're going to attack it because you might not see something that good again in that at bat.
Yeah, look, the stats do back it up. Most hitters, their best batting average as far as counts go is 0-0, first pitch. But the difference there is, or the key to that is, if you get a first pitch fastball right over the plate, yeah, of course, you should take a whack at it. But if you are getting pitches off speed and stuff that's breaking out of the zone and you're so hyped up that you're just going to swing at anything, that's when you get into trouble. And so I think that's the balance. There are hitters who are good at it and know when to look for a good first pitch to hit. And there's others that are honestly more comfortable trying to work the count. So it's kind of knowing who you are and, you know, more than anything, just recognizing what you're being given. I didn't go back and watch every single one of them, but I feel like a lot of these cases, Perez was throwing them pitches that they were reaching for very often on that first pitch. There weren't a lot of fastballs down the pipe that they were making outs on.
Nats on Thursday afternoon did announce that they had placed center fielder Victor Robles on the 10-day injured list with a left hamstring strain that he suffered in the win on Wednesday evening. And Jacob Young, not anybody else, not a top prospect, but Jacob Young gets called up from AAA Rochester. Nats, recall him, was young on Thursday as an at starting center fielder and number nine batter. He went 0-for-4 with a strikeout. The Nats bullpen in this game on Thursday was decent. A few things that jump out. So first of all, the overall body of work from the bullpen was pretty good. Four Nats relievers officially combined to allow one run in 4 2/3 innings. Now, there's some context here. Derek Law officially allowed a run in 1 2/3 innings, but he gave up a two-run homer. Came into the game top of the fifth, runner on first, one out. Nats down 5-1, and he made things even worse. He, to the first batter he faced, gave up a two-run homer by Connor Joe to left field for a 7-1 Pirates lead. Matt Barnes did then toss a perfect top of the seventh. Tanner Rainey tossed a scoreless top of the eighth. You like that, but this was another inning where you didn't necessarily feel great about the performance. He gave up an infield single and another single and issued a wild pitch and an intentional walk. And Dylan Floro tossed a scoreless top of the ninth. Now, he issued back-to-back one-out walks, but then generated back-to-back called strikeouts. But, you know, we talked about this on the last installment of the show. No scheduled off day until this coming Thursday. Another game in which the starting pitcher underperforms. Another game in which Davey Martinez ends up using a bunch of relievers. It feels like every game it's 3-4 relievers at minimum that Davey is having to use.
And they're not having quick innings. Other than Barnes, who was 10 pitches and 6 strikes, you had Derek Law throwing 33 pitches. You had Tanner Rainey throwing 21 pitches. That was after he had the 40-pitch appearance the other day. So just because you had a day off, it doesn't mean that you're going to be available necessarily the next day. Dylan Floro threw 22 pitches in his inning. So not that they couldn't come back to any of them again on Friday, but it's not ideal this early in the season. So it starts with the starter. Give him at least five. It'd be lovely if you could get into the sixth and get a couple outs, maybe even complete six innings. But then as far as these relievers go, you do need a few more efficient outings there. Not so much traffic on the bases, because you do have to pitch back-to-back days here. It's going to happen over a stretch like this. And if they're in games that are close, and this one wasn't really all that close, but most of their games so far have been, you need your best guys to be available, and you don't want to be in these situations like we saw the other day where Davey couldn't call on Hunter Harvey or Kyle Finnegan because they'd been overused and the other guys were not up to the assignment when they were thrown in there.
Hey, Al Galdi here for Window Nation. Baseball season finally is here. Spring finally is here. And that means a great offer from Window Nation for listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. If your windows are cracked or leaking and or won't open or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation, which is offering the following deal to listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Upgrade the look, feel, and value of your home with great new Window Nation windows. Window Nation is the best, and take advantage of the offer. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. And make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast.
Tim Shover's here to tell you about Game Time. The Phillies are in town this weekend. Make sure to check out Game Time. What's great about the app is you can see the actual view of all the seats in Nationals Park, and it has the lowest price guaranteed. One feature that's top-notch is Game Time's ticket coverage. Your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last-minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here's the set. And the pitch, breaking ball, is hit in the air to deep left. Winker's back to the warning track, to the wall, looking up, and it is gone. Connor Joe with a two-run homer on a 1-1 pitch from Derek Law. And the Pirates have broken this one wide open. Got a hanging breaking ball. Threw him three curveballs in a row, and he was ready. His first home run of the year, RBI 6 and 7. And it's now Pittsburgh 7 and Washington 1.
What'd you think of the latest outing from Tanner Rainey? You know, every outing, I feel like we do scrutinize quite a bit because we want to see Rainey get back to where he has been. But these outings have not been clean so far.
No, two strikeouts, that's good. I think the fastball was maybe around 94, so that's like a little better. Still not what we used to know from him, but a long inning, like I said, 21 pitches after throwing 40 a couple days ago. And it's going to take time, but I mean, I think it's notable. These last two appearances by him, circumstantial or not, have been kind of mop up. They've been late in games that they're trailing by more than a few runs. And I think for now, that's where he's going to be until he reestablishes himself. You know, if we're trying to figure out, like, after Finnegan and Harvey, who's the next most trusted reliever in that bullpen? It seems early on like it's maybe Jordan Weems. If not, then it's Dylan Floro. I think there haven't been a lot of games where that has set itself up for that, but I think probably Weems at the moment would be the guy. And to be honest, based on track records, You would think that Floro, Barnes, Law to some extent, and even Rainey, if healthy, have a little more experience than Jordan Weems in terms of pitching high leverage spots late in games. But at the moment, they haven't necessarily earned the manager's trust. And so I think it's always interesting to see how this plays out. You can go into a season and think you know what everyone's role is going to be in a bullpen. And very often, they dictate to you who's effective and who can be trusted and who isn't. And I think a week into this, we're not really sure, besides Finnegan and Harvey, who is it that you can trust late in games?
No, not at all. You know, I was thinking about Rainey. So he only ended up pitching in one game last regular season. We spent a good chunk of September waiting and waiting for the return of Rainey, and it did not come until super late into the regular season. He underwent the Tommy John in August 2022. Given the benefit of hindsight now, has his recovery not been as good, as smooth, as easy as it should have been? Because, you know, looking back on that, it is odd that he only pitched in the one game and now he's struggling. And you wonder if maybe his recovery from this Tommy John has maybe not been as easy as you would want it to be. But what do you make of that?
You know, I think the one appearance was one big league appearance. He had a bunch of minor league rehab appearances before that. And at first, it sounded like maybe they thought he'd be up, you know, maybe more like mid-September. And the sense I got was that the velocity was not all the way back. The mechanics were kind of off. I don't think it was a health question. I think it was more of a pitching question at that point. And then they did want to make sure he got at least the one appearance just to, so he knew, peace of mind, okay, I've made it back and now I can go into the next season and feel good about myself. You know, we talk about him as like this proven established guy. He's not really that. He does have some late game experience for them from a few years ago, but he's never really been that like locked down late inning guy in the big leagues over an extended period of time. And so some of it is returning from the injury, but I think some of it is him still trying to prove what he is as a big league pitcher, regardless of the injury history. And, you know, when you lose a year plus, as he did it, that's even more now for you to prove and establish yourself. And I think he's not there yet. And I'll be interested to see how they play this. Does he become the seventh man in an eight-man bullpen, or does he establish that he can be more than that and be the third, fourth, or even, you know, second most trusted reliever in a bullpen eventually?
It's funny hearing you say what you just said, because you talk about like a proven lockdown reliever. How many guys like that have the Nats ever had? I mean, I'm serious. Like, you look at, since the franchise came here, how many guys would you truly apply that label to? There are very few. Like, have there been good seasons by relievers? Sure. But if you're talking about someone who season in, season out over a significant chunk of time, 3, 4, 5 years, you felt good about as a reliever, that guy has not been here. You know, Chad Cordero was great, but not for a long period of time. Drew Storen had his moments, but not for a long period of time. You know, you look at now, I mean, I wouldn't call Kyle Finnegan or Hunter Harvey like a proven guy. It really is something. This is the 20th season of Nationals baseball. You know, we've talked about like who's the best reliever the Nats have had. You know, I think you probably would say Tyler Clippard. So I guess maybe you could say him, although he obviously was not a closer. But like, man, there have been very few like truly reliable lockdown relievers who this team has had.
Yeah, I'd say Clippard's number one. I think, as we talked about last year, Sean Doolittle is next on that list. And his struggles when he did have them usually were either a product of injuries or just overusage. Like, when he actually had help around him, he was extremely good. Now, Daniel Hudson wasn't here for a super long time, but he was nails when he was here, not just in 19, but the next year after that, before they traded him. So I'd probably put him on the list. But yeah, I mean, you know, you get a Mark Melanson for a couple of months, somebody like that. But no, consistently, and I think one of the issues has been a lot of their best relievers they've had over the years are guys that they acquired at the trade deadline or in the offseason who already were established. They have not been homegrown, develop into a top-notch late-inning reliever, and that kind of fits in with a larger theme that we've discussed more than a few times over the last few years.
It's hard with these relievers, man. They are not trustworthy. It's why they are relievers. If they were more trustworthy, they probably would be starting pitchers. So next up for the Nats is their first National League East Series of this regular season. No, the Nats have not been shifted to the National League Central. They are still in the NL East. A three-game series against the Philadelphia Phillies at Nationals Park this weekend. Game one Friday evening, 6:45. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats starting pitcher. Game two Saturday afternoon, 4:05. Jake Irvin will be the Nats starting pitcher. And game three Sunday afternoon, 1:05. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher. Look, the Phillies still have that very imposing lineup, but the Phillies, like the Nats, 2-4. So, you know, it's not like the Phillies have been running over everyone so far this season.
The NL East is kind of a mess here early on. The Mets finally won their first game. Despite being no hit into the eighth inning in the back end of a doubleheader against the Tigers, they came back to win that game. The Marlins are winless and just getting crushed by pitching injuries, including Yuri Perez now needing Tommy John surgery. The Phillies, as you said, not so great. Even the Braves, like, you know, they're still good, obviously, but they're, what, 3-2, I think? They've had at least one or two rainouts as well. You know, it's the first week of the season, so you can't read too much into the standings. But boy, if there was ever a week for the Nats to have just closed out one of those games, especially the game in Cincinnati, they'd actually be in a decent position right now if you care about the standings here in the first week of April.
Would be lovely to see that. This episode of the Nats Chat Podcast brought to us by the Fred Nats, the National Single-A affiliate in Northern Virginia. Their opening weekend begins on Friday night. See the future stars of the Washington Nationals right down the road in Fredericksburg. Tickets start at just $10. You can buy your tickets now at FredNats.com/tickets. You can hit us up on X at Nats_chat. You can email us as well, NatsChatPodcast@gmail.com. We this season are offering sponsorship for individual episodes. So if you're interested in sponsoring the show after a particular game or after a particular series or for a particular series, you could email Tim Schobers. Again, that email address, natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is at Nats Chat Podcast. We have a website that we invite you to check out, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.